Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Advisor Radio, broadcasting from Horse's Mouth headquarters in downtown New York City. I'm Horse's Mouth senior editor, Ed Klink, and we're here on day one of Advisor Fest. Now, today's show is brought to you by Vanguard. Vanguard's low-cost ETFs can form a strong foundation to help you meet your clients' goals. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking with the always entertaining and insightful Jim Rohrbach. And later in the program, we'll be interviewing Connie Kadansky on call reluctance, and later we'll have Bob David on the power of visualization. Working the control panels is producer Doug Pierce. Doug's the guy you'll talk to when you call in with a question. So let's take a moment to explain how Advisor Radio works. Now you can hear our show live two ways. First, listen to it streaming through your computer, assuming your player is not being blocked by your IT department. The second way is to listen directly over the phone by calling 347-215-7291. That's 347-215-7291. And of course, if you have a question or comment for any of our guests, just call that same number and press number 1 to indicate you want to ask a question. Doug will come on and he'll take it from there. So that's how it works. Joining me on the line is Sean Bailey, Horse's Mouth Editor-in-Chief. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Ed.
How are you doing?
Doing great. How you doing?
Good. Excited to be here for Advisor Fest.
Indeed, we are. We're all excited. We've been working on this now for about 6 weeks, and today's the first day of basically 10 days, 8 business days, but over the next 10 days, advisors will have the chance to really learn a lot take this time to sort of step back from the fray and think about their business for the second half of 2009. We've got all sorts of great presentations lined up. You mentioned three people we have on here on Advisor Radio this morning. And later this afternoon at 1 o'clock, we have Dan Richards on, who's going to be doing a presentation on a very highly tactical presentation about using a luncheon strategy for prospecting. And later on at 4 o'clock, we're going to have Leo Pusateri on. He's going to be talking about advisors responding to the fee pressure that a lot of them are under, especially in the last year with these markets. In both of those cases, and in all of the Advisor Fest programs we have lined up, they're all meant to be highly actionable. Advisors who listen to the programs will, at the end of the session, you know, have some very clear steps, strategies and tactics they can implement right away in their business on the variety of topics we've got lined up. So, you know, that's kind of the broad overview. We have a whole bunch of other things happening on the site today.
Now, how do if people want to register for either of these presentations today and they haven't done so, how do they go about doing that?
Right. Good question. If you're on Horse's Mouth now as an active member, just click on the Advisor Fest logo in the main navigation area.
Okay.
That will take you to the full listing for the webinars. If you're listening to Advisor Radio right now through our public site, to go to any of the sessions, you simply need to register for Advisor Fest, and you'll receive your username and password for Horse's Mouth. And then once you're in the site, you can click on the Advisor Fest logo. Actually, I believe after you do your sign up, it immediately drops you on the main webinar registration page for the different events.
Now, what are you charging for these?
It's free.
Free?
Absolutely free for advisory. Now, we advisors, it's free for everyone. We had somebody call up recently. What? You mean this is free? I said, yes, absolutely, it's free. And the reason we're doing it, reason we're making it free, is that this has been an unprecedented year, and since about September 15th of last year, really the world's been turned upside down. And it has been, you know, an unbelievable challenge for advisors. We talk to them all the time. It's been a very, very difficult market. The market's been down. They've had to deliver more client service than ever. People are under a lot of stress. A lot of people rolled right into 2009, really just, you know, going all out and without having the opportunity or the time to step back and think about, okay, the world has changed now. How shall I recalibrate my business and my strategy and my client service, my prospecting, my investment strategies? It's just been, you know, a big tear. And so we wanted to take some time now over the next 10 days to encourage people to step back and look at their business, look at the range of presentations we're offering here, see which ones resonate with them regarding their chief business challenge that they're facing right now, and hear from the experts and take the opportunity to implement. It's like a Chinese menu almost. We're presenting a wide range of things, and each individual advisor knows what the key things are in his business, and we're going to present the tactics and strategies that will allow them to move forward in the second half of 2009 and be prepared for, you know, start preparing, you know, for 2010.
And I notice when folks register, there's a lot of ways that they can participate, including the Advisor Fest cartoon caption contest.
Yeah, right.
When are we going to have the results for that?
Well, we're going to start voting. We're very close to...
Yeah, so you have the chance to vote on the caption contest. Also, we have great investment books that have shaped your market discipline. You can add yours to that growing list, and also a list of motivational books we have as well. And we're going to talk about motivation, too, with Jim Rohrbach. Let me see with our producer here. Doug, do we have Jim Rohrbach on the line?
Well, I'll step in for Doug and say
he
yes.
He is.
I
Jim,
am Jim Rohrbach,
welcome.
Accept no substitutes.
All right. I think we lost Sean there for a minute, but we've got you on the line.
Great. And, great to be here.
I know, and you are going to be doing a presentation for us, right, one of our webinars later in the program next week.
Yeah, hopefully an interactive presentation if people want to call in or email in questions. That's actually the most fun, entertaining, and I think useful for people because we can handle some challenges right on the phone lines here and help people move forward in their business and career and hopefully in their lives. And that'll be on, I believe it's on Friday the 19th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
Correct. So people can register for that one on the Advisor Fest page, and you'll be on with Bill Smith, a longtime veteran advisor who has his own take on how he stayed motivated in this business over the years. So that's going to be great. And actually, if anyone has a question for Jim Rohrbach, press 1. We'll take them right now. I think, Jim, you'll take a question live, right?
Anytime, anywhere, at least during the weekdays. Yeah, I love coaching, love what I do, work with mainly financial advisors around the country by phone to help them go to the next level in their business. And my tagline is the personal fitness trainer for your business. And if your business is somehow out of shape right now or your thinking or attitude is out of shape, I have some ideas that might be able to help you get back into shape and keep yourself in shape.
And now, as a Cubs fan, how does that tie in with being motivated?
Ed, I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up. However, yes, I'm native Chicagoan, although I've lived other places, and I am a Cubs fan, and all I can say about them is anybody can have a bad century, and let's leave it at that.
Good. Well, whether you're a Cubs fan or got some motivational challenges, feel free to press 1, ask a question of Jim, and we have a few questions for you while we've got you on the line.
Good.
And the one thing, did you see the survey results we did on motivation? We could talk about that more on your presentation, but I thought we could do a sneak peek.
Yeah, which is a very well-done survey, and I do have it right here in front of me, and a lot of interesting results from the people that actually responded. So what is it you wanted to cover there, Ed?
Some of them are listening in right now. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting about the question about listening to professional development audio programs.
Mm-hmm.
And you've written about that for Horse's
mm-hmm.
Mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Part of, we get this daily diet, whether it's CNBC or the news, and there are a lot of serious things going on in the world that you got to keep track of, but it seems that in general the media will just continue to weigh on you, and you'll take on all of these problems in the world, and you'll take it into your daily business. So you talk about the importance of being conscious of what you're consuming in your head.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I prescribe to all my clients, and I actually do it myself, is a daily morning ritual, which includes reviewing my personal mission statement for my business, working with affirmations to build and maintain a strong self-concept, doing a daily morning visualization. And then on my journey into the office I'm at, which is only 20 minutes, I make a point of, at least on the weekdays, listening to motivational audio programs or educational or inspirational, whatever you want to call them, to block out some of the information from the general media, which I believe is designed to create fear, insecurity, and anxiety, because that's how they hook people on continuing to participate in their offerings. So most of the media that you're paying attention to is geared towards fear-based thinking, which will get you fearful and anxious and scared, versus developing and maintaining a positive mental attitude through listening to something that might nourish your mind, like something from a Brian Tracy. And I don't know if most of our listeners right now are familiar with Brian Tracy, but he's one of my great inspirations. And it's funny, Brian is not the most exciting or entertaining speaker on audio, and yet he delivers a ton of beef in every audio program. And he even tells you that things like television is cotton candy for the mind. It has no nutritional value, and as a matter of fact, could kill you if you just had a steady diet of cotton candy, rather than listening to working on writing down your goals, as Brian suggests, working with daily affirmations, as Brian suggests, and reading an hour a day in your field, which he also suggests is a way to get into the top 10%. Now, for those of you skeptical out there, I was skeptical too when I first heard that, which is over 20 years ago, on an audio program from Nightingale Conant Corporation. I'm a big fan of theirs as well, and we can talk about them later. And in it, he said, if you want to get to the top of your field, read an hour a day. And when I first heard that over 20 years ago, I went, an hour a day? You've got to be kidding. Come on, how about an hour a week? Where am I going to find time to do that? And what I came to realize is that, not unlike financial advisors, my job is to bring ideas to my clients and information to my clients and educate my clients. And I'm not going to find those ideas by watching the Cubs or listening to them on radio or watching the news, which, again, I'm not saying don't ever watch the news, but typically if you're watching news programs, it's mostly disturbing news, frightening news, scary news, most of the time. I'm not saying all the time, especially the news since around last October in the markets has been pretty disturbing. And now FAs, financial advisors, need to obviously pay attention to that and make adjustments. But what it's led to is a lot of fear and panic and uncertainty, which is why people would have a financial advisor to help them through this time. And by the way, having said that, there's a lot of people that are saying, well, gee, I really don't want to prospect or get out there or talk to people because right now the markets aren't great. But when the markets get good, then I'll go out and prospect. And I'd have to say that for any financial advisor who's taking that approach, this is the ideal time to go out and prospect for new clients or clients for other advisors or clients that are doing it themselves. Because the analogy is, if you were having difficulty and a pain in your shoulder and you went to a doctor and he recommended surgery, well, wouldn't you want to get a second opinion before you had the surgery? Now, if your shoulder's fine, I mean, there's no need to even switch doctors or go to a doctor. So, again, the analogy is, if when the market's going up and doing great, why would someone ever want to leave their existing financial advisor? But when the markets are shakier and confusing or unsure, that's a time where people may lose confidence in a financial advisor, and it's an ideal time to get out and prospect, do a lot of networking with other professionals to both get and give referrals, and then finally to ask your current clients who else is experiencing some consternation out there, because I'd like to have a conversation just to see if they're doing what they need to be doing to protect themselves in a difficult time.
And part of that, when you're going out and prospecting in this environment, you want to exude the confidence and a positive attitude, and that comes from the things that you're reading and listening to.
Yeah, exactly, and how you're programming your own mind. And it comes from, you know, first of all, what's your mission for your business? Do you have a mission statement for your business? Do you have a sense of mission or purpose about what you do for people? In other words, do you love what you do enough to be willing to share it with other people? And I always have three questions for people. Number one, do you believe you're a good person? I mean, really believe that you're a good person, and the answer should be yes. Number two, do you believe, and I mean really believe, you have something great to offer people through your products and services as you offer them to your marketplace as a financial advisor? And then if question three, if the answer to questions one and two is yes, why would you want to rob anyone out of experiencing who you are and what you have to offer? I mean, you should be arrested if you're not getting out there and talking to people about, hey, you know, are you sure you're on track to meet your financial goals if you really believe in what you're doing?
If you believe you're a good person, yes. Believe you have something to offer, yes.
Something great to offer.
Something great to offer. Then why would you want to keep that from others?
Yeah, and again, regardless of the market conditions, people are going to need solid financial advice from a financial advisor who knows more about investing and achieving financial goals than the average person would ever care to know. So that's why they might, you know, again, that should end any thought of being reluctant to go out and network with other professionals, especially, boy, I paid my taxes on April 15th, and I know my accountant was really busy, but right now he's probably twiddling his thumbs. He has nothing to do and no one to talk to. I'm kind of joking.
Right.
But now is an ideal time to go meet with accountants and say, okay, well, tax season is over, and we share some mutual clients. Let's see, first of all, if they're on track, and then second of all, who else do you know that might benefit from some solid investment advice, especially in this difficult market?
We're on Advisor Radio with Jim Rohrbach. If you have a question for Jim, it's a great opportunity. Press 1, and we'll get you on the line with him. And Jim, you mentioned about having a mission, and this comes up a lot in talking to financial advisors where they often have an idea of what they want to do in their head, but the idea of sitting down and writing it out, it just gets put off or it doesn't get done. And you've been on some of our popular discussion forums that we've had on getting your mission statement critiqued, and we've seen a wide range of missions that people have written down. Maybe we could take a few minutes and just talk about that. I know some people think a mission, is that what you hang on the wall that says, you know, I'm going to provide excellent service and be a valuable resource to clients, and they hang that up, and they think that's a mission. Is that the case?
Well, in my opinion, it's a little different, and what people hang on their wall is typically more of a marketing blurb that's fit for public consumption that I might call a vision statement, and those are all well and good. In my opinion, a mission statement has goals and a deadline. It's a statement of doing. In other words, where am I going to be by June 10th, 2010? And if people have never had a mission statement, I have a proprietary process that I share with them that can get them a mission statement probably within 20 minutes. It's a little fill-in-the-blanks form, not unlike Mad Libs, if you've ever played Mad Libs. But at the end, you have a clear goal with what you want to achieve by the date of I start people off with a one-year mission. And it's interesting, on the survey, it says, do you have a written mission statement? And I think it's less than a third of people do have a written mission statement. Oh, no, 50% do. So, but then I have clear written goals based upon my mission statement, only 37%. And if you have a mission statement, you should certainly have your goals based upon your mission.
So it, you don't have to wait to, for New Year's to do this. You could start right now if you don't have one, and you just set for next June, and you have to tie it in with – you can't just say grow my business. You can't just say get more clients. You need to specifically state what you want to do by a certain date. And is there any kind of reward ever tied to this?
Well, I would think you'd also want to tie rewards to when you finally fulfill your goals and your mission that you set up some kind of reward system saying, and when I fulfill, not if I, but when I fulfill this mission by June 10th, I am going to reward myself and my family with a trip to Hawaii, for example, assuming that you achieve a certain level of income. It always needs to be rewarding. First of all, achieving the goal be rewarding intrinsically, but then also to acknowledge it somehow publicly and celebrate success, but not for too long, because the rule of goal setting is once you achieve a goal, you always need to set other goals beyond that. And so you can never stop peddling for very long if you have your own business, which, again, all financial advisors really have their own business. Nobody works for anyone else, although you may have an association with a major wirehouse. You're still self-employed. And the idea is to always be looking to set the next goal and the next achievement level so that you can never rest for very long. And, you know, it's not unlike professional athletes. Right now we have the NBA Finals going on, and the goal is always to win the World Championship. And you look at a year ago, the Los Angeles Lakers made it to the Finals but then lost in the Finals. And immediately they reset the goal and to win the Finals this year. And right now they're up 2-1. We don't know if they'll win it, but I'm impressed by the dedication of the coach, Phil Jackson, and the team to saying that wasn't good enough. And, you know, the team is on a mission, including Kobe Bryant, whether you like him or hate him. I don't know if you're a Lakers fan or a Magic fan, but you have to admire a guy who is a multimillionaire and still gets up at, my understanding is, according to the announcers, gets up at 5 a.m. every morning to work with his fitness trainer. And one-on-one. This is besides the practice and workouts he goes through with the team. He has his own fitness trainer with him at 5 a.m. and has since he lost the last Finals. So that's dedication, that's commitment, and it comes from a sense of mission or purpose. If he doesn't win the World Championship, it's been a disastrous season.
On that point, many people think, they look at professional athletes like that, and they think, well, if I had that ability, you know, I'd have it made in the sports arena too. But that's not the case, because these folks are dedicated in a way of having visualization and motivation as part of their daily plan. I mean, mm-hmm. Tiger Woods, he practices visualization. Mm-hmm. And people many times think, oh, that's kind of like mumbo-jumbo stuff, but it really isn't. And let's talk about that. We're going to have Bob David on at 12 o'clock today on Advisor Radio talking about visualization. I'm kind of curious what your take is on it and how it relates to having your mission statement. What is visualization?
Visualization is nothing more than mentally rehearsing what you want to achieve. All great athletes are doing it, and also I believe the top successful people are doing it, not just in the financial advisor world, but I've read a few of Donald Trump's books. And again, I don't know what anyone in our audience thinks of Donald Trump, but in his books he comes across as very intelligent and hardworking. So I also, again, believe that his TV persona is over-exaggerated on purpose to get people to think he's a real jerk to deal with. And my opinion is if he was that big of a jerk, he wouldn't have maintained working relationships with employees for over 20 to 30 years. So in his book, he talks about the importance of visualizing, seeing the goals, seeing the buildings built, or he's also apparently a great golf course designer, seeing the golf courses designed in his mind's eye, and holding on. He talks about holding on to that vision when the inevitable adversity comes. You know, it's not a question of whether adversity is going to come for any of us on the line here. It's going to come, and our mental approach and our resiliency is the key to overcoming it, and part of that is holding on to the vision or the mental picture we have of achieving our goals. And a quote from Trump's latest book is, it's called Think Like a Champion. He says, you have to be positive every single day. You have to put a daily effort into it, because believe me, no one else is going to help you with this. So this is a very individual thing that each one of us, if we want to be successful, we have to have a mission or a sense of purpose about what we're doing. We have to affirm that we're capable of doing it. And then we have to have a mental picture of what it looks like when it's accomplished. So for an advisor, I would say that if there's a certain level of achievement you want to attain, you first of all visualize that goal, whether it's 250,000 gross if you're just starting out, or a 500,000 or 1,000,000 or 2,000,000 or 5,000,000, again, by the end of this year or by a year from today, that you would mentally picture it somewhere. If you have a computer readout of your assets under management, you want to have that goal, and then silently visualize that with your eyes closed on literally a daily basis to impress it upon your subconscious mind. Now, this is nothing more. I'm going to bring up, if I might add, my favorite book of all time, my favorite business book, Think and Grow Rich.
I have a copy right here. Yep.
Yes, and just like the American Express card, I don't leave home without it. Got mine in my briefcase, and I carry it with me everywhere. And I reread it every December before I set my goals for the coming year. And each time I read it, I just gather a little nugget of wisdom that I may have forgotten or skipped over. And Napoleon Hill says that, first of all, you need to create a statement of chief definite aim or major purpose in the second chapter on desire. And that's, in essence, he's instructing people to create a mission statement for their business. And then he says, commit in chapter 4 on faith, on 3 on faith, he says, commit it to memory and recite it. He says, and I quote, any idea, plan, or purpose may be placed in the mind through repetition of thought. This is why you're asked to write out a statement of your major purpose or definite chief aim. Commit it to memory and repeat it in audible words day after day until these vibrations of sound have reached your subconscious mind. In other words, until you can see, feel, and believe that you're already in possession of what you intend to achieve. And also in his prescription, he says you have to state what you intend to give in return to achieve this level of production, if you will. Now, something else I'd recommend an advisor do, and I assign this to my clients, if you work at a major wirehouse and you have a certain club-level achievement like chairman's council or president's club or premier advisor, whatever it's called in your organization, and if there is a plaque or if there's a certificate, you go get one from someone, you borrow it, and you make a copy of it, photocopy, and then you dummy in, you know, you white out the other person's name and the level of achievement, and you dummy in your name and you hang it in your office or maybe somewhere discreetly where you can see it if you're not there yet, so that you reinforce, yes, this is where I'm going. I am a top producer at my firm. And this is all part of visualization, having mental representations of, here's where I'm going. This is who I am. This is what I'm all about. So that there's no doubt, again, like Tiger Woods, this doesn't mean you're going to win every single day in your business. But what it does mean that overall, cumulatively, you will win. Just like Tiger Woods doesn't win every tournament he's in. But he comes close, and he makes the effort, and he intends to win every time.
So you have your mission statement, and you're visualizing reaching a certain goal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, and you do everything you think you need to do to get there, but you fall short.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, what do? You reassess and just get started again, you know, reset with a new mission statement and plan. You don't just sit and say, oh, I failed at that.
Yes. Exactly. You need to take a look at, okay, well, it's December 31st, 2009, and maybe I didn't get quite to where I wanted to get to. And you need to take a look at, okay, how much did I fall short? And then what were the reasons? It's almost like you're reviewing the game film of the year, and you're looking at, okay, what went well, and then what needs to go better in order for me to attain it, and then you'd reset your goal. You know, you can even find out, and this, you could have a coach, but you could also work with your branch manager, or you could have a peer support group that helps you review, you know, okay, what quite didn't make it? Was your goal unrealistic from the start? You know, some people set goals too high at the beginning. That's not uncommon, where they think, and the analogy in the working out world is, okay, by the end of this year, I want to run a marathon, and I've never even jogged 3 miles. Well, that might be an unrealistic goal, but maybe, you know, running in a half marathon or working up to, you know, 20 miles a week might be a realistic goal. And again, it's very individual. But then for the end of one goal period, you just say, all right, I need to reset my goal for the coming year, either at the same level or maybe, if my expectations were out of line, a little bit lower and more realistic. And then what are the specific things I need to do to get out there and build this new business, which typically means more contacts. The advisor business, not unlike the coaching business, is a contact sport. In order for me to build my coaching business, I need to do things like get on Horse's Mouth and do things like Advisor Fest and write articles. And I'm a big fan of networking, network locally, and network even nationally with my previous clients and my prospects, and then also ask my existing and previous clients for referrals. And typically, if I fall short, that's what I'm not doing, and probably that's what most advisors are not doing if they're falling short on their goals, is they're not doing enough networking, enough with other professionals, and they're not effective or don't know how to ask for referrals. And I know you're going to be having some seminars here at Advisor Fest about asking for referrals and also on networking. And I highly recommend you all out there listening, attend these if you haven't quite achieved your goals.
Well, that's why we wanted to have you on here at the beginning of kicking off Advisor Fest and Advisor Radio to talk about motivation, because it really is kind of the underpinning of,
yep,
of this entire thing of what we're doing. All the events that we're doing really come back to based on motivation and getting charged up, and that's the purpose of Advisor Fest.
Yes, and one of the main things I want to share with people is, I've even written an article and featured it. I believe it's been on Horse's Mouth. The title of the article is, I Can't Motivate Anyone Except Myself. So if you're thinking of hiring a coach to motivate you, forget about it. Motivation is intrinsic. I can inspire, I can educate, I can hold you accountable, I can help you celebrate. But initially, I can't motivate you. We can't have a conversation about what your motivation is. In other words, why is it important for you to go to the next level in your business? And if you don't have enough reasons why it's important for you, there's nothing I can do to help you or anyone. So you have to take a look at, why am I in this business? Why is it important for me to go to the next level? And you need to literally ask yourself the question, why, and then come up with some answers. Some answers could be, well, first of all, I want to provide a better lifestyle for my family, including my living space. You know, our house needs an upgrade, or we need a new, bigger, better house. Or perhaps even a winter home in a warmer climate if you live up north. Second, that's one area of motivation. Number two is, well, I want my kids to have the opportunity to have the best education possible for private schools or the college of their choice to support them in their aspirations to become the best they can be. Third area could be, well, what motivates me is I have ailing parents that might need my assistance. Fourth motivation could be, well, there are some things, some toys or some experiences I want to have that I haven't had yet. These can be vacations, getaways, even a luxury automobile, although I think that's not as exciting as some other experiences because it's a car. Basically, that probably isn't a big driver. And then fifth, and maybe a bigger driver for people, is do I have a cause that inspires me, that I want to assist people that are less fortunate than me in going to the next level? So, for example, is there someone that may have a cancer situation that you say, hey, I want to get more involved in helping people with cancer or diabetes, or I happen to support a youth center here in Chicagoland. These are kids that might have not ever had a chance other than support from people like me. And so that's part of what drives me. So again, going back to what motivates you, you have to determine that. If you don't have it, I can't give it to you.
We are on Advisor Radio with Success Skills Coach Jim Rohrbach. Jim has coached many financial advisors, and he's on with us right now. If you have a question for him, if you're listening through your computer, call 347-215-7291. That's 347-215-7291. And just press 1, and our producer, Doug, here will see you raising your hand, and we'll get you on the line with Jim Rohrbach. Jim, I spoke to a financial advisor who, when you mentioned about getting a bigger house or getting a vacation home, who stressed the importance of getting other people on board with having the mission. So, for example, if he said, look, this is what I want to do. I want to be able to get a getaway home, a little ski house, and by getting his spouse and children on board, like, look, this is what we can all aspire to. I might have to work late a few nights. I need to know that you're getting your homework done. You know, you can help out doing your things. His spouse can help out with things as well. And by all being on board that plan, they have a goal that they want to achieve instead of struggling with his business that it's taking time away from the family. They're all kind of working together toward this common goal. What do you think of that?
I think that's an extraordinarily useful conversation for anyone who's married and has kids, that you want to share, here's what I'm up to, here's my sense of mission or purpose, and here's why I'm doing it, because we've all agreed that this is important to us, whether it's more family vacations or better living space or having the kids have the opportunity to go to the best schools. And also, inadvertently, or perhaps consciously, the parents can send a message to the kids of the importance of having goals and getting support for those goals. And if you are raised in a normal family, you don't get much of that. So that would be an extraordinary step for an advisor to take, to sit down with the family and say, look, here's what I'm up to. Here's my goals. Here's my mission and goals for my business, and here's why I'm doing it. And so sometimes if I seem a little scarce, it's because I'm busy helping us to get to the goal of great education for you guys and getting that special trip if they want some kind of special trip so they can all get away together. Helping out with ailing grandparents from the kids' perspective, they might not understand that, or supporting a cause. And then also, again, giving the kids the message that goals are important, which will help anyone's children have a leg up on the competition, so to speak.
When you talk about visualization, I've spoken to advisors, too, who have a picture or a photo of that item, whether it is the car, in a case, you know, I want this mm-hmm. Ford Mustang, and they have that picture on their mm-hmm. desk, or the picture of that getaway home in the woods. That all helps with really planting that in your brain.
I totally agree, and I have pictures of not so much material things, but people that are important to me around me, and also my financial goals are posted up on a wall nearby my phone, and my mission statement, and other motivational, inspirational quotes. And if anyone out there has been familiar with the DVD, The Secret, which has gotten some very positive press by people like Oprah, but also some negative press. There was a little backlash against, like, oh, well, all that says is you sit there and you just meditate and picture or visualize your goals, and then $1 million is going to come in the mail. Well, that's not exactly what I take away from The Secret. You still need to be in action and be doing things. It's just it makes it easier if you're clear on this is what I want and this is where I'm going. And certain people in The Secret have suggested you create what's called a picture board. of the things you want to achieve and put them up on the wall. If a new, a great new home is important and inspiring to you, you put it up on the wall. If a great ski vacation is important to you, well, you put a picture of you skiing up on the wall. If an organization you support is important, you put a picture of that organization up on the wall. If you're trying to get in better shape, maybe you take a picture of your head and cut it off and put it on Arnold Schwarzenegger's body, at least when he was in great shape. As the governor, he's a little less in great shape than he was. Pictures of success and happiness, anything that has meaning to you, it's called a picture board or an image board, and it's a great idea. Again, you may or may not want to have it in for public display in your office, but certainly somewhere where you can see it every day in your home. And that will reinforce the vision of what you're trying to accomplish. Again, you can't just sit there and visualize and expect clients to walk in your door. You still need to do the real-world action. But I do recommend the DVD, The Secret. I think it was very well done and was designed to get people to start mentally picturing their outcomes.
We wrote about that at Horse's Mouth. Folks can search under The Secret on the website. We kind of distilled it down like we do with a lot of motivational and books that are out there. But that was really saying you put it out to the universe, what it is that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a little controversial about that, but I guess essentially the point is that if you're focused on something, it
yes.
starts to appear.
Yeah, it comes down to mental focus. How focused and how bad do you want to grow your business to the level you say you want it? Again, it's no different, in the DVD, The Secret, that may sound a little airy-fairy, woo-woo, unrealistic, but it's the same thing that Tiger Woods is doing, mentally rehearsing him winning championships and making the shots he needs to make to win those championships. It's the same skill for anyone in business. And again, people like Donald Trump are picturing his outcomes. I'm sure Steve Jobs has a terrific creative imagination where he's picturing wonderful, great products that people can use through his company, Apple. Same skill is available to all of us. Unfortunately, most people are visualizing lunch. Let's see, is it going to be the Big Mac or the Whopper? And it's like, well, and I'm not saying you don't need to do that if you're going for lunch, but that's a low-level use of one of your greatest gifts, which is your creative imagination. To all success begins with ideas in your mind, and if you can hold on to the idea that you are a top producer, eventually you will achieve it. And that's that comes with daily reinforcement through visualization.
We are on Advisor Radio with Success Skills Coach Jim Rohrbach. If you got a question, you're on your computer, dial 347-215-7291, 347-215-7291. Press 1, and we'll get you on with Jim. You can ask a question. And in about 15 minutes, we'll have Connie Kadansky on with Call Reluctance. We'll be talking about that. And later in the program, we'll be talking to Bob David about the power of visualization. Now, Jim, I think we've got Sean Bailey, Horse's Mouth Editor-in-Chief, on the line. I know he wants to ask you a little bit about morning success rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Sean, you out there?
Yes, I am. I'm back.
All right.
Welcome back.
Thank you. So, Jim, we just finished doing a survey on motivation. I think you were mentioning it before. And I was just pulling up some of the results where we asked folks about the morning success ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, let me see here, we have about 25% of people. We have about 25% of people saying that they have a morning success ritual.
Mm-hmm.
75% don't. And then we asked them to
comment.
Yes, right. Sorry, I'm trying to adjust my volume here.
You sound good now.
Okay, good. So we have 203 comments from people where they're describing what their morning success ritual is. And I've just been skimming it a little bit here, and I wanted to throw a few out there and get you to comment, see what you think.
Sure. By the way, if anyone wants to find out what I do every morning, there's an article on Horse's Mouth called A 5-Step Morning Ritual for Success. I believe that's the title. And you can search, well, you can do a search on Rohrbach, Rohrbach on Horse's Mouth, and find my articles there, and it should come up. So it'll tell you what I do, but I can also share a little here. But go on, Sean.
Okay. So, you know, there's a wide range of interpretations as to what accounts for a success ritual, or more,
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say, as a daily morning ritual, whatever it
mm-hmm.
is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people, it's get up at 6 a.m. and take a 4 to 5 mile run.
Mm-hmm.
They say it clears my head. It's good
mm-hmm.
for brainstorming. And you know, that's their take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Others, you know, reading the Bible first thing in the morning, and it's
mm-hmm.
just sort of their morning devotional.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's others that are. Let me run a few by you, and just you know, we'll talk about them.
Sure.
Well, here's one.
And by the way, you know, there's no right or wrong. There's
mm-hmm.
no like, well, it's if you don't do it Jim Rohrbach's way, it's wrong. I would
right.
never be so presumptuous to say that. And I agree that if someone just takes a 5 mile jog in the morning and that gets them in the zone and clears their head and is a great time for them to just brainstorm on ideas, that's fantastic. I do believe that everyone needs to do something before they enter their game of business. And I use the analogy of if you had a baseball team you support, we don't want to go back to the Cubs, but if you had a baseball team you supported, wouldn't you want them to take batting practice before they played the game? Or if you're
right.
wouldn't you want your pitcher to go to the bullpen and warm up before the game, and just like they're getting their bodies warmed up and their head into the game? That's my opinion about why it's important. Oh, go on, Sean.
Okay, so there's some actually the first one I highlighted is not a morning ritual at all. The person says, before going to sleep, I always ask myself the question, did you make a difference in someone's life today?
Great. Fantastic question. And, again, if that's how that person does it and reviews the day and, you know, they're going to sleep meditating on how did I help someone today, you know, that's a wonderful
right.
mental review. And if that's what sets the stage for a successful day the next day where they're waking up, I would assume thinking, okay, how can I make a difference today? Totally valid. You know, it's funny you say that. Some of my clients are, quote, not morning people, unquote. And after
right.
trying to get them to do it in the morning, we realized, hey, they find it's easier to do in the evening because the kids are in bed and they have some quiet time. And I said, great, then you're going to do an evening ritual, a daily evening ritual. So that's valid, too.
Okay. Here's another one. business and life has been tougher since last September.
Mm-hmm.
And just when I need to do the things I do to stay motivated and on top of my game, I've let these slide. However, if I'm not reading the things I should be reading, I am working out and find exercise helps me greatly, both physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So, here's one. Each morning I listen to the news.
Let's go back to that
sure.
one.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. You know, obviously from fourth quarter last year on, it had been challenging, although I think things are readjusting now. And I think it's even more important to stick to the mental disciplines of mission statement, affirmations, visualization, reading, listening to positive audio programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important at those times to literally keep the faith in yourself and what you have to offer the marketplace when you're bombarded with so much fear and negativity. And if you're an advisor, I would think part of your job is to stay centered in the storm and be a rock that people can cling to. And that's why the morning rituals are important. And second, that person said about the regular workouts, I'm a big fan of working out, and I typically work out 5-6 times a week. And it has so much going for it in terms of getting yourself in physically great shape to handle the inevitable adversity and challenges that business is going to provide. It gives you the energy and the stamina to handle it. So highly recommend it. Go on, Sean.
Okay. Let's see. Here's one that I like. Each morning I write down in my diary five things that happened the previous day which I am grateful for.
another article I've written, I don't know if it ever made the cut at Horse's Mouth, is Three Keys to Prosperity. And three keys are gratitude, generosity, and forgiveness. And going back to the first one, just being grateful every day, if you could just put yourself in the shoes for even 2 minutes and visualize someone in a developing country that literally doesn't have indoor plumbing, and then think about what their life is like compared to yours. No matter how the market is doing, you should be thanking your lucky stars for all of your blessings. I'm assuming, well, if you're in the United States here, we have just so many blessings. And, yeah, there are challenges, but is it more challenging here or somewhere where you don't have indoor plumbing or, God forbid, you're in a war zone?
Right.
So being grateful every day for the blessings. I mean, it's a blessing just to be able to come together here on this technology. It's pretty amazing stuff that people take for granted. So what?
Right.
Well, this wouldn't have happened 10 years ago.
Right. Okay, here's another. Daily time reading my Bible and praying, followed by reviewing my mission statement and my monthly dashboard, which is a quick review of my quarterly and monthly goals.
Again, outstanding, and if you can include...
With next steps, the person ended by saying.
Yes, outstanding if you follow a certain religious calling, whatever that sacred literature is, and you engage your mind with that. Isn't that a lot better than opening right up to the market news and, you know, oh, the Asian markets are down, and, I mean, that doesn't do anything for your spirit, and... being strong in a difficult time is a spiritual challenge, and so leaning on great spiritual literature is also a very smart idea. And then again, reviewing your goals, and instead of being cast about in the winds of adversity, you become an inner-directed human being, and that's what it's all about.
Here's one that's very detailed. It says, first, I look at my day's planned agenda, and I reconfirm that everything scheduled has a green light and will most likely take place during that day. For the major events that are coming up within the next three days, I take a moment to close my eyes and to visualize those events taking place and leading into positive results, almost as if a rehearsal for things to come. Then I take a moment to pray to God and give thanks for my blessings. And lastly, I get up and proceed with the plans of the day.
I would be surprised if that person wasn't the top advisor in the top 10%. If he or she is doing that every day, got to be a person that really gets it, that here's what it's all about, taking control first thing in the morning of my thinking, my mental pictures about the way I want things to go, and then being grateful right out of the box. That's the kind of person that you go to the Starbucks, and while everyone else is frantic and can't wait to get their coffee, this person is taking their time in no rush, is smiling and friendly with the baristas at Starbucks, and... always tips, and seems to be in no hurry. That's a successful person.
Good, good. Let's see here. Every morning I work out at 5 a.m. and show gratitude and contemplate my thoughts for the day. Then I walk my dogs 1 mile and relax and take in the beauty of the environment. On the way to work, I listen to a motivational tape or story.
Mm-hmm. Doing all the right things, and, you know, again, emphasize enough the power of motivational, inspirational, or educational audio programs. I'm a big fan of Nightingale Conant Corporation, who is the world's oldest and largest publisher, producer, and distributor of audio programs. Been around since 1960 and pioneered the concept. And so you can listen to people like Brian Tracy, Wayne Dyer, who I'm currently listening to, his latest program from Nightingale Conant, Tony Robbins, Zig Ziglar, the who's who of successful people, giving you the ground rules for here's how to take your situation to the next level. If you want to find out more about them, just go to nightingale.com, Nightingale, and do yourself a favor and shut off the radio you're listening to, or I don't know what you're listening to. You could, of course, listen to books on tape as well. But if you want inspiration and education and motivation, I highly recommend Nightingale. Because let's face it, what are people listening to typically? Might be listening to sports talk radio. And it's not that I never do that, but you know, listening to all that is never going to change the scores from last night's game. Maybe you're listening to either shock jocks like Howard Stern, which, okay, I'm sure he's entertaining, or Rush Limbaugh. And either way, you're going to agree with their opinions, but you're not going to learn anything new that's going to help you build your business or stay motivated and inspired to do your best in your office. That's why I recommend these.
Right. Here's one totally different. I devote 45 minutes every day without fail to studying with a mentor. Now, there's no more detail, so I don't know whether that studying with a mentor means, you know, pulling out a particular book or whatever the case is. But
yeah, and again, we all need help to go to the next level. We all need to take in new ideas, and that can be from books. It can be from audio programs. It can be from going to seminars or workshops.
Mm-hmm.
It can be working formally with a coach like myself, but you could just as easily get a mentor in your office if you aspire to. One of the assignments I give my clients when I first take them on is, okay, find someone who's doing business at the level you want to do it at and go have breakfast, lunch, or coffee with them. If there's no one in your office or you're an independent, go and seek someone out, and even if they're not local, make a phone appointment and interview them and find out, okay, here's where my business is at. Here's where I want to go to. When you were at my level, what were the best things you started to do to build it? And also, what were the things you needed to stop doing? It's a
right.
Wonderful assignment. So again, you don't have to hire a coach, but you do need someone to give you support, accountability, and feedback to help you go to the next level.
Good. Here's another one, very detailed, and starts off with, I am impressed at the degree to which, there are some, religious overtones here or the idea of praying, but the person starts with, I begin my day with prayer on the way to work, rosary.
Mm-hmm.
When I get into work, I sign on my computer, check my emails and voicemails,
mm-hmm.
check commission for the previous day, and examine how I am doing for the day, month, and year.
Mm-hmm.
I track my assets under management on my analytics and review my to-do list I created the day before.
Mm-hmm.
I've divided that list between making appointments for new money and retention and for calls on ideas or for retention.
Mm-hmm.
I took on a partner and I try to meet with him regularly, developing him, and also to make sure he has followed through on our marketing tasks.
Okay.
He goes over alerts and I handle the ones he's flagged. We send out weekly research so he runs the idea past me before sending it. Or if I like something, I run it past him.
Mm-hmm.
That is the basic structure of both my day and my week.
Again, this is a person with a plan, and, praying, in my opinion, prayer is not unlike affirmation. It may be you're asking for help and guidance and strength and courage to handle challenges. And, the journey to success is a journey of spiritual development. It's not what you get when you become successful. It's who you become. And that's a great quote I heard years ago. And I believe that it's about developing ourselves spiritually. And so there is, quote, a religious overtone to that, or at least a spiritual one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think if you look around, in my opinion, if you did a survey, and this may be something Horse's Mouth wants to do, about the top producers and what kind of spirituality or religious practices they have, I would bet you that most of them have some kind of spiritual or religious discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
It's
all about developing faith in oneself and what one's capable of doing to serve others to become the success they intend to become.
Good.
Great.
Good.
Well, we've been on with success skills coach Jim Rohrbach, and we want to thank you for joining us, Jim.
My pleasure.
Actually, we're looking forward to your presentation, which is next Friday, June 19th.
Great.
And you'll be doing a webinar on Advisor Fest, Staying Positive Month After Month, Breaking Through the Inertia.
Yes.
And you'll be on that with veteran advisor Bill Smith. And listeners out there can follow the Advisor Fest link on the Horse's Mouth main page to register for that. It's free. like all the other events at Advisor Fest. And you can check out Jim's articles on Horse's Mouth, searching for his name, Jim Rohrbach, Rohrbach.
Correct.
You can visit him at successskills.com. That's successskills.com.
You need three S's in the middle, folks. Otherwise, it's success kills.
Okay.
Wouldn't want that to happen. Not during Advisor Fest.
Nope. And they can email you at coach@successskills.com.
Correct.
Or they can call you directly, right? Could I give them your number?
By all means.
847-600-5187. And you do offer a free coaching session.
Free consultation for anyone that's interested in exploring more about going to the next level in their business. Be glad to offer that.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Jim. We appreciate having you on the show. Looking forward to your webinar. And if you're just tuning in now, you can catch a replay of this. You'll be able to hear Jim Rohrbach. And we've got Connie Kadansky coming up on Countering Call Reluctance. We'll bring Connie on in about a minute.
Great.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Thank
you so much, guys. Good luck, and I hope Advisor Fest is a great success.
Thanks. You're on Advisor Radio. We'll be back in a minute. On Advisor Radio, broadcasting from downtown New York City, I'm Horse's Mouth Senior Editor Ed Klink. Later in the program, we'll be speaking with Bob David on the power of visualization. Today's show is brought to you by Vanguard. Vanguard's low-cost ETFs can form a strong foundation to help you meet your clients' goals. On the line now is our featured presenter for today. We have Connie Kadansky. Connie Kadansky is a consultant, speaker, and trainer specializing in overcoming sales call reluctance. She offers effective tools and training to diagnose call reluctance and assists advisors in highly profitable prospecting. Welcome, Connie.
Thank you.
All right. Great to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
Good. We just had Jim Rohrbach on talking about motivation, and now we're moving into call reluctance. Now, how do you tie in motivation with call reluctance? Do you see that being a big part, people not being motivated to make the calls?
Yes, and there are different definitions for motivation. The one that I use is the physical and psychological energy available to prospect. And so if people are not feeling good physically and psychologically, then that's their first issue they need to take a look at.
And what are some steps they could do to address that?
Well, is how healthy are they physically? Because it takes a lot of physical energy to prospect. And so we look at the trilogy of good health, diet, physical exercise, and most importantly for most financial advisors is sleep. Are they getting enough sleep? And really comes down to self-care, because when they walk in the office and they're feeling good physically, then most likely they're going to have more motivation to get on the phone and prospect.
Well, studies that are out there say that people just generally aren't getting enough sleep, and that just has a negative impact on prospecting right from the beginning, huh?
Oh, absolutely. It really does. I recognize it in many of my clients, and yes.
Now, To start off talking about call reluctance, I want to look at your definition of the three ways to grow business. What are those, in your opinion?
Well, it's a great question to start off with, because three ways. Number one, bring in brand new, fresh clients. Number two, sell more to your existing clientele. And number three, retain your existing clients. So most advisors are very good at, number two, selling more to their existing clients and retaining them, but it's not enough. There's an attrition in a business, and so bringing in brand new, fresh clients is all about the prospecting.
Now, you told us your definition of motivation. What's your definition of prospecting?
Yes, the definition for prospecting is the proactive step that you take to identify, isolate, and get in front of your ideal prospect. So it's the proactivity. And there's two types of prospecting, Ed. One is push prospecting, where you go out and you contact prospects one at a time. And another is pull prospecting, where many financial advisors are doing seminars, and so they're actually polling and being, you know, the attractor where people are coming to them through trade shows, networking, and that's a way where they can truly develop an industry-specific celebrity status in their area, in their niche. So it's having both of those components in the prospecting.
Now, We survey many advisors, we speak with many advisors, and what always comes up is that prospecting is one of the more difficult parts of the job. Why is it so difficult for financial advisors?
There are so many dynamics going on, and what I believe is the biggest one is they are perceiving prospecting as an emotional threat to them and their ego versus an opportunity. And they're so identified with that, yes, that positive outcome, that they allow the no or I'm not interested to throw them into self-doubt. So they're really forgetting the key to prospecting is that it's all about the right message, the right time, with the right person. So, Ed, they may be calling the right person with the right message, but they just merely caught this individual at an inappropriate or inopportune time, and so they're so caught up in their anxiety that they're missing that message, and so they're allowing that to throw them into self-doubt, and then they have to psychologically recover. So they stop prospecting for the day or for the week, and it's that kind of a dynamic that's going on. And also, they haven't developed the emotional skills to handle their feelings. So the underlying fear in call reluctance is the fear of self-promotion. So they're afraid to promote themselves and their services. And they've got a major internal battle going on. And they haven't accepted prospecting as a vital component to their business. And when I say acceptance, and this is what I help my clients with, I think, more than anything, is acceptance is for this moment in this situation, it requires me to initiate contact with potential clients, and I do so willingly. So we don't have to get them to enjoy it and to be wildly enthusiastic about it, but to neutralize their fear and just accept, you know what, this is part of what I do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Now, on a fundamental level, we all know that self-promotion is important. I mean, for a band to get heard, they've got to promote themselves. For a movie to get seen, the actor's got to go out and promote it. We all know that that happens, that that's important. But why is it that many advisors have a fear of self-promotion when we know it's necessary?
Well, there's a lot of components in here. Sometimes there's a hereditary component. Sometimes there's a personality component. And sometimes they were promoters, and then all of a sudden their trainer is telling them, don't go out there and do this and this and be one of those obnoxious promoters. So then they start developing a vision of how inappropriate it is to self-promote. And then also, Ed, a lot of times I notice that they're not connected to their value. So you find a financial advisor that is really convinced of their value. It is there, so they're integrated. They're integrated in knowing their value and knowing that they are of service. And what Jim Rohrbach was just saying is it's all about serving others. And when they can get integrated in that and get deeply rooted in the fact that they are helping people, they're a trusted advisor, they're a valuable component in this individual's life, their fear of self-promotion is put in the background because they're so focused on their value.
We're on Advisor Radio with sales expert Connie Kadansky. If you have a question for Connie, it's a great time to call in. If you're listening through your computer, call 347-215-7291. That's 347-215-7291. Our producer, Doug, will get you on the line with Connie, and press 1 when you call in so we can see you raising your hand. So feel free. It's a great chance to ask Connie some questions. What's your definition of sales call reluctance, Connie?
Call reluctance is the emotional hesitation to prospect and self-promote. So it's really important. It's the emotional hesitation because prospecting is not an intellectual exercise. It's an emotional exercise. Your intellect needs to be working, and you need to have a good script. You need to be listening, but the emotional is that big component.
Now, this call reluctance can really sabotage any advisor's career. Have you seen it happen?
Oh, yes. Yes, and it throws them into self-doubt. So they come into this career optimistic and feeling good, and they've set their goals and they're convinced of the value. And the more they experience call reluctance, they start down what I call the self-doubt spiral. So then they start doubting their career choice. Oh, maybe this career isn't for me. And the more that call reluctance takes a hold of them, then they start doubting themselves. And again, they're going down that self-doubt spiral. And many of them just diminish their goals or bail out or decide to go somewhere else, or some just kind of decide to just stay mediocre and just limp along. And, Ed, the reason that I'm in this business is because call reluctance is nothing to be embarrassed about, but living with it needlessly is, because there's something that these people, the financial advisors, can do about it. And it's thrilling to be able to give them that glimmer of hope to do this career that they really do have an affinity toward.
Now, you've talked about how sales call reluctance keeps financial advisors from earning what they're worth. And that's pretty powerful, that you know, you're going around and you could be making more than you are, but it's you're holding yourself back, essentially.
Yeah.
What are some of the most costly aspects of sales call reluctance that you've seen?
Well, there are 12 types of call reluctance, and one is intimidated by that high net worth individual, because many of your advisors, they have a limit of $100,000 to $250,000 of investable assets, and so if they're socially self-consciousness suffer from that and are intimidated by that upscale buyer, they're already having anxiety and doubt going into that conversation. So that's one of them. And another one that is prevalent and highly contagious with the financial advisors is role rejection, where they are absolutely ashamed and rejecting their role as a salesperson. And I always promote an article written by William Nicklin through Horse's Mouth, and he wrote it. He said, "Don't fall for the selling is bad trap," and it's a very good article, and it addresses this feeling ashamed. So that's one. And also is referral aversion, where, think about, that is really where an advisor can just grow their business organically. But they're afraid or fearful, or they perceived it to be a fearful, to ask their current clientele or even their prospects for a referral. So those are three of the 12 types that I see can really handicap a financial advisor.
So for people listening now who might say, you know what, I'll admit it to myself, I'm intimidated by high net worth or wealthy people. And what could I do about that to get over that?
Well, and I wrote an article on this very specifically at Horse's Mouth so that people can go, because there are some tips there. But it's starting to recognize that those are the people that really need you. But here's the challenge, Ed. We don't like to get people where they're having an internal argument with themselves. And so with social self-consciousness, one of the first exercises that I give my clients is I recommend that they go out and start just socially reaching out to high net worth people, because if they can start talking to them in a social situation, it's amazing how they recognize these people really are good people. And I am just conjuring up here that I should be intimidated by them. But if somebody's suffering from that, get that article. I think that there are 7 really good practical tips in there.
Yeah, one of the other thoughts about that is you really don't know what's going on in another person's life or situation. Just because they have a certain car, I mean, they might be making payments on it. They might have a certain house that could be close to foreclosure. So no one really knows, you know, when you're first meeting someone, just because they have these trappings, that they're necessarily wealthy or high net worth, and that's part of what interacting with them will bring out. But you shouldn't just be put off immediately by what they have or what they're showing off.
Well, and people can position themselves within the high net worth, within their communities. I had the privilege of working for a multi-million, world-famous lawyer here in Phoenix. I mean, he was part owner of the Phoenix Suns. He had a Learjet. And I was his assistant, and I remember taking calls from people. And I remember the type of people that I was able to be the gate opener for him. And also with his high net worth individuals, oftentimes it is they need to have a little bit of credibility. So when you're calling these people, you've got to have some credibility. You've got to do a little bit of name dropping if possible. Now, I know that there's some confidentiality there, but one of the things that I believe is that there is not one way that's going to get you 30 high net worth prospects, but there are 30 ways for you to get one. And so it's all about strategy, structure, and execution. And when you really sit down and put your mind to it and you get your network working, you can get in the door. So it's all about visibility, credibility, and a strong value proposition. And then also, what is the common thread? Are there any common threads that you know of? So if somebody really has their sights on a high net worth individual in their community, find out what they do. Find out what they like. Find out whether they're on a particular board. And so there's ways to do it, but, you know, strategically, but then you also have to work on your own intimidation factor at the same time.
Let's talk about that for a minute. What people would get through when you're acting as the gatekeeper? Who are the people that would get through as far as what would they say versus the ones who you would not be putting their call through?
Okay, number one is look at that individual as the gate opener. Because if you're already going into that call, oh my gosh, I got to get through this gatekeeper. And with these people, you treat that gate opener just like you would treat this very important person that you're calling. And what I found is the people that would be honest with me in integrity and say, this is what I'm calling for. And I work with several people like, and the name of the individual. So now it's like, oh. So I'm at least intrigued, and I'm thinking my boss might miss out on something. And so now I'm a gate opener. They're treating me very courteously. And then I'm seeing this guy you know, 10, 20 times a day, and I can say, hey, this individual is, and da-da-da-da-da, and here's the number. Now, I cannot guarantee he's going to call back, but I'm incredibly influential. But when many people would call up and they wouldn't tell me what the call was about, my antenna is already up. There's something out of integrity here. So the advice is tell this individual what it's about and who you are and why you're, you know, this your boss should call him and or her. So I just remember it vividly about having that experience. And so that's the advice that I pass on.
And a gatekeeper is a very powerful role. I mean, I imagine if you were to say to your boss at that time, you know what, don't talk to that guy. You know, I don't like him. He would take that what you're saying, and whether it's a good opportunity or not, in many cases, if they're rude to you or somehow you know, they see you as not important or someone to just get around, that's going to come back on them.
It is so true, because I had people that would get pushy with me, and as a professional, I always passed messages along because it was my job. But I would say that I remember this guy was so rude. He goes, throw it away. And it went into the trash. And so you got to remember that you're dealing with some people that get pushed around, and when they know they're in an ego position, you've got to really work with them. And anyway, yes, very powerful relationships there.
Good. We're on Advisor Radio with sales expert Connie Kadansky. I'm Ed Klink here at Horse's Mouth. If you have a question for Connie and you're listening through your computer, call 347-215-7291, 347-215-7291, and press 1, and we'll get you on the line. You talk about call reluctance as it's kind of an affliction, but who's carrying this around? Is it being spread around? Where are we getting this from?
Yes, because call reluctance is contagious, and the number one carriers are sales trainers and sales managers, because they are, unbeknownst to them, they have enough power to contaminate the very people they intend to inspire. And when I go into organizations, sometimes these managers and CEOs are absolutely astounded at them not knowing what they didn't know that they were doing to their salespeople and their financial advisors. They're just amazed, because sometimes trainers and managers, their intention is good, but, Ed, they're presenting and they're standing up in front of the room teaching about prospecting, and they're saying, don't do this and don't do this and don't do this, and whatever you do, don't do this. So they're also already coming from a fear position. And so you get a new financial advisor who's all excited about the value, and then all of a sudden this trainer or manager is saying, and don't do it, et cetera. One of the main things is people do not like to be called on the telephone. Your prospects hate to be called on the phone. They just planted a major fear of, oh, my gosh, these people don't. That is such a disservice, and I beg managers, really start recording your sales meetings. Start listening to what you're saying to these people. And is your ego sabotaging your troops? And I see it. I can give you example after example of managers just – you know, the real aware managers going, oh, my gosh, I had no idea what I was saying and what I was doing. So that's a big one.
It sounds like people, we need to reprogram our minds when it comes to this, when it comes to selling.
Well, you know what I call it, Ed, is I call it transforming. Because self-improvement, all self-improvement is polishing up and adjusting the individual, polish him up a little bit, individualize them a little. But what I believe in is transforming, and I help people transform their fear into focused, related thinking, communication, and action. And the big thing here is, yes, thinking, but communication. And most people think of communication as conversing with another person. Well, we really get into the internal communication. What is that financial advisor saying to themselves that is creating their own anxiety? So helping them become aware of, oh, my goodness, that's what I'm doing. So it's really about transforming in that regard. It's very healthy.
Could you share a technique for overcoming call reluctance for those listening?
Well, the first one is strongly rooted in behavioral science, and it is thought realignment. And the premise behind thought realignment, which, again, rooted in behavioral science, is it's not prospecting that causes a financial advisor anxiety. It's their thought about prospecting. So when financial advisors really slow themselves down and recognize that it's their thought and their perception, and also that they're projecting their fear, their own fear, onto the call, once we can get them to slow down and recognize that, then they start realizing, I can choose my thoughts here. I can focus on my value. And another reference for Horse's Mouth, there's an article, The 80 Things That a Financial Advisor Does for People. Highly recommend people get that. And so when you're ready to get on your prospecting call, you get so focused on the value, that's what you're choosing to think about, versus allowing your habit of thought take you down the rabbit hole of fear, anxiety, intimidation, that kind of thing.
Well, those are good points, Connie. And you know what? We do have a caller on the line with a question.
Okay.
You could bring that caller on, my producer, Doug. We have the caller on with Connie. Let's see. Just take a moment to... If you're out there, ask away. You might be on in a moment. I don't know if he's still there or not. If you have a question, it's a good time to ask. 347-215-7291 is the number if you're listening through your computer. 347-215-7291. Press 1 and raise your hand. We're on with sales expert Connie Kadansky, and we'll see in a moment if our producer Doug has a question for us. You talk about developing a rhythm for prospecting, that's really a key feature of being successful. What exactly do you mean by that, a rhythm?
Well, a consistency around this activity. So because many advisors, they go on and they force themselves to prospect. They get a few appointments and then they stop. And so a consistency of a rhythm is kind of like people who work out. You know that it works better is if you get a consistency. So that's what I mean, because when you can get a consistency, then you get into a rhythm and you get into a flow of prospecting. And that's what you want. I get so many calls from financial advisors that got into the business and they forced themselves to prospect. And they built a good business, and then they kind of laid back, got a little bit complacent, and now they're in a panic because they got out of the habit. Because prospecting is a habit. It's a habit. It's, you know, you think about all the activities that you do to take care of yourself throughout the day. It becomes a habit, and it becomes second nature. And so I know people that are at prospecting that if they don't prospect, they feel off. So you want to get into that habit because it really is the lifeblood of business, and you'll be more alive the more people you talk to and meet with, and that's the reason. We want to create that habit, that consistent habit.
Hmm. Seems we have Dino on the line. Dino, do you have a question for Connie?
Yes, I do.
Hi, Dino.
Hello,
How are you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Columbia, South Carolina today.
All right. Good.
100 degrees outside, so I'd rather be inside on the phone.
Ah. So, Dino, how can I help you?
Well, we're known as probably professional interrupters. So when we make a call, you know, and let's say we're trying to get to the high net worth client, and then we get you, the gatekeeper, and obviously we want to get through to the gentleman or to the lady that we want to talk to, but is it better to set an appointment with the gatekeeper to do so, or how would you go on and try to get to that individual while you're on the phone?
Okay, so Dino, number one, what can you do to start training yourself to see this individual as the gate opener?
I apologize, you're right. It's the gate opener. I view them that way. I just used the same terminology I've known before.
I know, and again, it's one of those subtleties. So you think about if you're calling a trial lawyer that is, incredibly successful, and you're right, they're most likely not going to be sitting there and going to take your call. And so you can ask the gate opener, how is it best to get in touch with this individual? How is it best to be able to have a brief conversation? Now, also, I know this is a firsthand fact. Sometimes walking into an office, because I have a financial advisor that did it here in Phoenix, two of them got together, they walked into 12 attorney offices, and it was like, you know what, we don't have a lot of time, like to have maybe a 2 to 3 minute conversation. They got to talk to 7 people. So sometimes that works. Again, it's thinking about where you're at and what are you willing to do. Are you willing to make that effort to just pop in? And sometimes, 7 out of 12 is pretty good, and they did set 3 appointments. So think about those ratios and just get creative. But the likelihood of a gate opener at that particular time, it may happen if somebody's walking by their desk at that time. But think about those people, they've got a lot on their mind. They're doing something at the present moment. So you've got to work around that.
So you're saying cold walking is good, just as good as cold calling?
It may be even more effective. And recently I was at a conference here in Phoenix, and the success of cold walking was something that really surprised me, that there were some salespeople that were saying, hey, it is working for us. So it does take a little bit more energy and willingness and motivation.
Great. Well, thanks, Dino.
You're welcome.
Okay. And, Connie, we've got Dutch on the line. Next, we could take a call from Dutch.
Hello, yes.
Hi, Dutch. Where are you calling from?
Michigan.
Hi, you're on with Connie Kadansky.
Connie, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Connie, I have a severe form of call reluctance. My issues are I just find it, I'm very knowledgeable in my subject, basically dealing with 401ks, deferred comp cases. But I'm very knowledgeable, but it doesn't seem like I can I have this fear that I won't be able to answer a question, or that maybe I'm, not the right fit, or maybe it's the wrong time to call. Maybe I should call here. And sometimes I even look at lists and go, well, you know, the name sounds weird. Maybe I won't call them. So I think it's more of a severe case of call reluctance. I'm kind of hoping for something to get me off that.
Well, it's possible. It's absolutely possible. And you've already gone through the fact that you admit that you're call reluctant. And what it sounds like is when you're afraid that you don't know, that they may ask you a question you don't know the answer to, that's the over-preparer call reluctance, where they they want to have all the answers. So, Dutch, how long have you been in this business?
About 8 years.
And so, again, you've got this internal battle going on, and it's helping you transform that into focus-related thinking, communication, and action. And so this thought realignment, the book, The Psychology of Sales Call Reluctance, I highly recommend that you get that book.
Okay.
Because it has all the solutions in it. You can self-correct, or you can, I can, you know, coach you for a few weeks. Most of my clients, it's not a long term, because it really can come together. And so the fact that you recognize it, you're halfway there. So it's helping you to get off of projecting onto that call. So just like you said, this name sounds a little bit weird. So I don't. So you just gave yourself an excuse,
exactly,
to not help these people and serve these people. And I know that people are transferring and working on some of these 401ks. I had a friend the other day that lost one to somebody. So I know that people are doing that. But how integrated are you in why you? Are you, do you have a really strong value proposition so that when you, that and that when you call them, that you can give them a strong, credible value proposition? Or is your value proposition shaky? So there's some homework to do there. And on Horse's Mouth, Ed did a teleconference on your elevator speech. I highly recommend that you go on there, listen to that, because that's maybe where you're out of integrity. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about what I just recommended?
Well, I definitely think I want to get the book and possibly give you a call.
Okay.
See if we can do something. I think, you know, again, I think like most advisors, it's in the presentation before this that talked about rituals, morning rituals. I think that's one thing that a lot of people lack, and I lack, is I'm kind of scattered when I come in the morning instead of being more detailed, and I think that could possibly, you know, lead to some sort of call reluctance. You know, I'll put it off until 10 to 11. Maybe at 1 o'clock I'll start calling, and then soon it's time to go home.
Well, and, yeah, so procrastination is an excuse to keep you from moving forward, and also it does take discipline, but my definition of discipline is remembering what you want, because you think about all the people that are highly disciplined. They are so tapped in, tuned in to what they want, that they discipline themselves, and the more discipline you have, the more freedom you're going to have. And so that word discipline can be a friend. Most people that reject it are people that don't have it. And so I really hope that you implement what you heard from Mr. Rohrbach and start, because it is true. You've got to be internally organized in order to prospect.
Connie, how would I get a hold of you?
My phone number is 602-997-1101, or Connie, C-O-N-N-I-E, at exceptionalsales.com.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Dutch.
Yep.
Dutch had mentioned about having a fear of calling someone because they might have a funny name. I found that if you just pick up the phone and you call and you make an attempt at the person's name. For example, hi, is this Mr. Polychronopoulos? This is Ed Klink calling. Did I get your name right? And you just kind of put it out there right away that many people appreciate, wow, here's someone who tried to say my name, and they asked for clarification on how it's pronounced. So that shouldn't really be something that holds you back.
No. It's so funny. When I first moved to Arizona, there's a lot of Spanish, and I remember calling somebody, and I called him up, and his name was Jesus Ramirez, and I said, is this Jesus Ramirez? And he just burst out laughing, but I had never heard of that before.
Right.
So I agree, you know, there's a way to get around it, and we don't have to be embarrassed. When we're embarrassed, it's our ego that's embarrassed. Let's get beyond that.
Yep. Now, Dino in the previous call before had mentioned, he says, we feel like professional interrupters. That seemed to me to strike me as when you said we have in our minds certain things that are taught to us. So that's something to kind of get out of our heads as well, right?
Oh,
viewing ourselves that way.
Thank you for circling back on that one. Absolutely, because in reality, we are interrupting somebody, but I certainly wouldn't refer to myself as a professional interrupter. I mean, we have more value than that. And again, we're looking for the right message with the right time and the right person at that very moment. So is somebody really a professional interrupter, or are they a financial advisor that could save this individual from catastrophe?
Yeah, I'm glad Dino mentioned that, because it kind of lets us think about, you know, are we saying that?
And Ed, that's that internal communication that has become so habitual, but it's sabotaging us. And most people are just habitually taking on this stuff and listening to this stuff. And so that's one of the things that I work with my clients on, is having them slow down and eavesdrop into their conversations and help them become better communicators with themselves. And when they do that, they're going to be better communicating with everybody else.
We're on Advisor Radio with Connie Kadansky. And speaking of call reluctance, we have a lot of people out there listening, and it seems they're reluctant to call in with a question. So we need to change that. If you're listening through your computer, call 347-215-7291, 347-215-7291, and press 1. Our producer, Doug, will see you raising your hand, and we'll bring you on the line. And we've got about 20 minutes left with Connie. After that, we'll be speaking with Bob David on visualization here on Advisor Radio. So call in with a question for Connie. We heard from Dino, and we heard from Dutch. And when we were speaking to Dutch, he mentioned procrastination. And that's one thing I wanted to talk about, the whole idea of there are so many distractions that can come up that we would prefer to do rather than make that call. And there are so many things on our desks to do. We have so many personal things to think about, business things to think about. It's so easy to get sidetracked. What are some of the ways that you can really tackle procrastination right now?
Well, I always get the approach it from this way, because procrastination is we're going to put off something that is going to be unpleasant. I always say, hey, procrastination, you're putting off your next appointment. You're putting off meeting somebody who has some money for you. So let's just take this and have a completely different perspective here. What are you putting off? All it is one big fat excuse. But how does that resonate with you, Ed, when you're just merely putting off it's something good that can happen. You're putting off your next appointment that is going to turn into an amazing strategic alliance, or you're putting off your next appointment that is going to keep you from somebody that's going to turn out to be a center of influence. One time I was talking to a high producer, and I said, do you ever get call reluctance? And it was a woman. She goes, absolutely. And I go, what do you do? She goes, I just tell myself I better hurry up and call before somebody else calls them. And so that's what her perception is, and she's a top producer.
That's it, thinking that someone else is going to make that an opportunity. If you don't do it, they're going to take advantage of it.
Yes.
So, that's good. As far as having the confidence to, that's one thing to overcome procrastination, but another thing is really having an effective script. I know you work with a lot of financial advisors. These days, what type of script is working and getting appointments?
The best script that I know right now is to call people up and asking them something similar to this. How closely are you working with a financial advisor? Are you currently working with a financial advisor? So this is the second question, and you can have a lot of deviation from here. And when is the last time you spoke with a financial advisor? Because you know, a lot of people tell me they're in a panic. I don't know what to say when I'm prospecting. And I always say, hey, forget about what to say. What can you ask? Because when you ask a question, you are forcing their brain to engage with you. And here's something else I know. There are a lot of financial advisors that are calling on retired and elderly people. And the research shows that if you're talking too fast, an elderly individual will cut you off and hang up on you or just immediately end the conversation because they didn't understand what you were saying. And so for those of you that are calling into a retirees, you need to slow down and really slow down. Because I listen to my calls, my clients, some of them, the highly motivated ones, we actually record the calls, and we listen to them just kind of like the Monday reviewing the football game from Sunday, and that it's slowing down. And also, because right now, think about the question. Here's what you do when you want to figure out the questions. If you look at your prospects or look at an individual prospect, and if that prospect said to you, ask me any three questions you want to ask me, and I promise you I will tell you the truth, what three questions would you ask them? And then you get really, really clear, and you start working from there. But that is one that I know is working right now. Now, for those of you that are in private wealth management firms that are not big names, calling people up, introducing yourself, and just simply saying, have you ever heard of us, or have you ever heard of our firm? And again, it forces engagement, and if people say, well, no, I haven't, then you have to have a really strong value proposition ready to say. But again, you're engaging people, and that's what you want to do. You want to have a conversation. And another thing with the calls is conversational tone, because if you're experiencing anxiety, your anxiety is showing up in your tonality, because 73% of your conversation is your tonality, only 27% are your words. So if you're having anxiety, people are picking up on it. And so that's another thing. You got to really work on that and listen to how you're coming across. I was working with a client that he just had so much energy, and I said, you know what, I'm getting the impression is that if I say no, and he was having a lot of people make appointments and not showing up. And I said, I'm feeling that if I don't say yes to you, then you're going to strong-arm me, and it's going to be, you know, because I picture this guy being 7 foot tall, 360 pounds, from the voice that I was picking up on. So that's something we have to be really aware of, too.
How about planning out your day when it comes to prospecting and making calls? What's your take on having some type of a written plan, whether it's a daily, weekly, you know, a monthly, or a mission like we had talked about earlier in the program?
I think it needs to be a daily for most people. And also, it's something that you plan the night before. Get your numbers. I had one guy that would put 20 numbers in speed dial the night before. So then he would just come in and he would hit *1 and it would be, you know, there's his number. So again, he was highly motivated. And also is plan your prospecting around when you feel the best and the most energetic. So for most financial advisors, it's in the morning. But I have some that they don't really feel the best till noon or afternoon. So that's the first key. Make sure you're feeling the best that you can feel about you, where you're refreshed, you're prepared, you have a sense of calmness. One of the tips that I give people is and it sounds like that was what Jim Rohrbach was talking about, is consciously enter your day. And planning is so important, where you consciously, because, Ed, when people are prospecting, Their body is one place, and their thoughts are out creating so much havoc for them. So it's kind of like lasso those thoughts, pull them in, and make sure that your body and your mind is in the same place. Because the people that are experiencing fear, their mind is way out in front of them. Just like this, the Dutch that called in, he's afraid that somebody's going to ask him a question he doesn't know the answer to. That's an indication that his thoughts are way out ahead of him, and they're not even present within his body. His mind and body are not integrated.
Right. And well, and that's actually also an opportunity to follow up with someone. You could say, you know, that's a great question. I want to check on that, you know, make sure I have the most recent information. I think I just read something about that, and I just want to double back to you on it. Can I call you back or connect with you again? So, you know, you can just see that as an opportunity to meet up with someone again.
Yes. And you know what? People don't expect us to know all the answers. There's sometimes people ask me stuff, and I just say, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, sure.
And but I'd be happy to, you know, think about it. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, we have about 10 minutes left with Connie Kadansky. And if you just want to dial in, if you're listening through your computer, 347-215-7291. Press 1, or if you're on the phone right now, press 1. We'll get you through. And you can speak to Connie. Let's see. Let's talk about warming up a cold call. You got any tips for that? What do you think? Is there any ritual? Is there any way of going about that?
Well, do your level best to find a common thread. If you, again, if it's a high net worth individual, you can do some research and find a common thread. And if you don't, then you have to rely on, you know, if your niche. And I love this Rich Niche program that Horse's Mouth promotes and works with people on. But if all else fails, you can say something like, I work with several people similar to you. Because what happens in influencing, people like to do what other people are doing. I mean, that's just a fact when it comes to influence. So, but again, you have to have a strong value proposition. We work with several people similar to you or several families similar to families like yours. And then you've got to follow it up with some customization there. So you can warm it up, but a lot of times is your voice conversational? Are you warm? Are you the kind of person that somebody feels comfortable talking to?
And what's your take on the whole niche thing? It seems like that really would boost your confidence.
Oh, if you're
speaking the same language as somebody.
Oh, I am a strong believer in it because you, in developing it, because you think about all the professionals out there from lawyers to surgeons to accountants, they're all niching because there is so much to know. Even plastic surgeons, you don't just have a general plastic surgeon. You have somebody who specializes in lipo or eyes or something or noses, and even lawyers. Even personal injury lawyers, even medical malpractice lawyers, they're not just this be-all, end-all. And so when you have a niche, you have so much more traction. And also, you can build from there. You can be involved in associations. You can become a speaker at the events where these people show up. I'm working with somebody now that has niched himself in the dental industry, and it is a pleasure. It is a thrill. It is so much easier for people that are working within a niche than somebody who just hasn't taken the time and done the homework, because it takes time to develop a niche. But there are a few complainers that say, you know, I went through that program and I didn't get any value. And you know what I say? What value did you create for you? I always just kind of turn it right back on them. Well, I haven't been able to find a niche, but there are some of the most unique niches that you just, it's just amazing. So I'm
there
a believer.
Are. Yeah, definitely. And it can also, I know I've talked to financial advisors who on the weekends, you know, they ride a Harley and they're with a club and they meet other people that way. and or they might be pilots and have their own Cessna. They belong to groups. And then you do speak a common language when you have that type of activity or whatever it is, when you meet other people that share it. There's a common bond.
Yes, and it comes back to there's something alive in this individual. There's something alive in a passion that's alive in it. So it can't be a phony niche. And if somebody's, you know, I always say, what's alive in you? What's going on with you? Where are you, you know, because you can create something if you really want to.
Definitely. Good. What would you say is the number one rule for making money using the phone?
Number one rule for making money for using the phone is don't kid yourself. It works. It flat out works. Because there are advisors out there that are getting appointments, and then there are advisors that it's not working for. And you know why it's not working, Ed? Because they don't think it's going to work. Because if you're going into this thinking it doesn't work to prospect via the telephone, you will create a belief system, and then your belief system is going to create experiences for you to validate that belief. But that's why it's transforming and having you focus-related thinking. What is it that you're thinking that is helping you buy into the excuses here? Because there are people that think that prospecting is merely cold calling, and it is so much more. There's a cold calling component, and, you know, best case scenario is for your financial advisors to have such a good referral base that their phone is ringing all the time with referrals. I don't know too many people that have that luxury yet. They're developing it. But we've got to get proactive with that and get creative. And when people get mad and think that it's just about cold calling, it's telling me something about their attitude and their belief, et cetera. You know, and something else, Ed, this is so exciting. A lot of salespeople and financial advisors that are call reluctant have very much a resistance or resentment when a salesperson calls them. And so you got to get over it. If you get irritated when a salesperson calls you, what is that going to do when you're going to be out calling on people? What does that do? I'm asking you, Ed.
Right, right. No, it puts it in your mind that you're a professional interrupter.
And just, so, yeah.
And, yeah, it's just part of viewing yourself as you're intruding on someone's time, whether they're sitting down eating dinner.
And if you get annoyed when somebody prospects or solicits you, then when you're going out to prospect and solicit, it is going to come back and hit you right in the face. It's going to hit you right in the behind. And so that's a big ego thing. And for most people, and where the, you know, again, motivated people go, I never thought of that before. So now when they get a call from a salesperson, they're pleasant. You don't have to buy from them, but you're encouraging. You can go, hey, you're doing something I need to do. You can listen to what is working with them, and you can listen to what isn't working and learn and go forth with a learning experience. But you got to give it up. That is a big one for role rejection. Usually role rejectors, they can't stand salespeople, but in reality, they're one. So we got a little bit of mind work to do there.
Yeah, well, we're all selling something, so we may as well come to grips with that and learn how to work with it. Now, for those listening in, I have just one more question for you, and we'll let you go. If advisors out there could take one step today, right after this presentation, to overcome call reluctance, what should that step be?
Oh, I love this one, is sit down with a blank sheet of paper in front of you and write, I choose to prospect because I want. I choose to prospect because I want. and start listing as many reasons as you possibly can, including the reasons that you want to achieve your goals, and also think about what you're doing and how you're serving your prospects and clients, because this can be a really insightful exercise and expose people what their mindset is. But here's where I'm going with this, Ed. We want people to make a choice to prospect, because if they're fighting it and resisting it, they're not going to be effective at it. They're not going to be any good at it. That's why they're not succeeding. But when we can look at it as a choice, because individuals, we all like choices. You give yourself more freedom. You give yourself more permission. So I choose to prospect consistently because I want. And this exercise I've worked through with several clients, and this has been one of those forks in the road where they're able to make massive change here in their mindset instead of forcing this activity where they're not good at, they're not getting anywhere with, or they're getting very little results. This can be a major fork in the road for them.
Great. Well, we want to thank you for taking out the time, Connie. Connie Kadansky, and you provide coaching and workshops on sales. And for listeners out there who want to get in touch, they can reach Connie at 602-997-1101. Email her at connie@exceptionalsales.com and find out more at her website, exceptionalsales.com. Thanks for joining us, Connie. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And coming up in about a minute and a half, we've got Bob David, and we're going to be talking about the power of visualization. So stick around, grab a sandwich, and join us for lunch here. We're going to be having a fun conversation and learn some stuff. Bob David, coming up. You're on Advisor Radio. Back on Advisor Radio, broadcasting from downtown New York City. I'm Horse's Mouth Senior Editor Ed Klink. Joining us on the line from Virginia is Bob David. Many of you know Bob. He's a familiar face around Horse's Mouth. He's the former Director of Advisor Programs at Horse's Mouth, and he delivered the highly popular Automatic Referrals Jumpstart Program. Bob's recently gone out on his own as an advisor coach, and we're happy to have him join us on the line. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks, Ed. It's great to be with everyone.
Great. Bob, now you've got a presentation that you're doing, a webinar here for Advisor Fest coming up this Friday.
That's right, Ed. I'm very excited about it. It's called Leading Your Own Referral Revival. And as we go into summer and in the spirit, if you will, of Advisor Fest, we're going to be talking about all kinds of great ideas and tactics and tips on how you can really get the right referral mindset and re-energize your referral efforts.
All right. And how do I sound, Bob? I sound good? I'm on my headset here?
You sound good. You sound
right.
Good. How do I sound?
Yeah, you might just want to adjust that a tad if you got a headset on.
Okay.
All right. Let's hear you now.
Okay. Let's try it now. Is that a little bit better?
Good. Better.
Okay.
Good. For people listening in, if we want to call in, call 347-215-7291. If you're listening through your computer, press 1. And we want to talk about the power of visualization, because today, the first day of Advisor Fest, we really want to focus on the underlying theme here, which is really being motivated, having a vision, having a focus, and then on top of that, you use all of the other tools that we'll be teaching throughout the Advisor Fest and on Advisor Radio. But you were advisor for many years, Bob, and for some people who are thinking, you know, what is this visualization? This sounds a little bit like a, you know, hocus pocus. Is this really real for a business professional?
Ed, it's so real that it works whether we're conscious of it working or not. And it works both ways, meaning that if you visualize positive things, you'll be attracting positive things. If you visualize negative things, look out. Don't be surprised if you end up sabotaging your efforts. So for our listeners, I've looked up the official definition of visualizing Webster's, and it simply says forming a mental image. And you know, Ed, that research has shown that all of us as human beings, if we look at the physiology and the actual biochemistry, it turns out that our minds can't really tell the difference between a real experience and a vividly imagined experience. And so that's why if you've ever had a dream that you thought was so real that you could touch it, or the other side, if you've had a nightmare that your heart was beating and you kind of woke up and went, oh my gosh, that felt so real. Well, that was what was going on. You were getting a sneak preview of the power of that visualization. And those of you that have read the classic by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, you may recall that in the book he says that anything we can conceive and believe, we can in fact achieve. And this all starts with visualization, getting that clear mental image of who we want to be, what we want to do, and what we want to have.
I know, you know, we talked on the program earlier about Tiger Woods. He uses visualization. The golfer Jack Nicklaus would actually visualize the putt. He visualized the ball going, you know, into the hole. He would picture it all before it happened, and that was his ritual.
That's right, Ed. Speaking of golf, it's interesting you mentioned that. I was reminded recently of the story of the Vietnam POW that was locked away in prison for many years, but he was actually a pretty good golfer. And one of his survival techniques was in his cell, he would close his eyes and vividly imagine playing a round of golf every day. And because he played this course, he knew the details of the course, and after he got out, legend has it that one of the first things he did was go and tee off at that course, and he actually shot a par for that round after being in prison all those years.
Huh. Well, I believe it. I believe that's definitely can happen. For financial advisors, what are some of the key things of how they could incorporate visualization into their day?
Well, let's talk about, I'll get into two things. One is some of the direct applications of visualization, specifically for financial advisors, and then also some practical tips about how do you do it. So let's start with some of the ways that visualization can really help advisors in doing what they're doing. Let's start out with a popular topic I know at Horse's Mouth, niche marketing. If you are someone who you're not really sure exactly who you're best able to serve, or you're not real clear on the ideal clients that you want, guess what? That plays into your visualization, as opposed to someone who is very clear on what they can do for a specific group, their particular expertise, and the ideal client. It may be a particular age range, 50 to 70 years old. It may be a certain vocation. Maybe it's retired airline pilots. Maybe it's surgeons. Maybe it's blue-collar entrepreneurs. Whatever that is, we get vivid imagery that's associated with that niche market. And we find, surprisingly, that those that have a niche, guess what? They tend to attract more of those ideal clients. This also, Ed, plays into referrals, which, of course, is one of my favorite topics. Once we are clear on who we're going after, we can be much more targeted, and we can start to think about who we want as clients. There's other areas. Think about productivity planning, for example. If you come in, one best practice of visualization is first thing in the morning when you come into the office is to really take a moment, go into that silence, and think about what you want to accomplish that day. And write down what your major objectives are, and then think about how you want that to play out. I recommend in my coaching work with advisors to think about it like a movie. And you're the director and also the star of your own motion picture. And you think about how you want your day to play out. How's that client meeting going to go? How are you going to interact with your assistant most effectively? What's your mood going to be like when you speak with that client or that prospect? And Ed, the more vivid you can get that picture and the more senses that you can activate in that movie, the better. I'm talking about colors, bright colors. I'm talking about motion, movement, who's doing what in your movie. I'm talking about sounds. What are you hearing as you're watching this motion picture? And even down to smells. You know, we can vividly smell things and we can get anchored to certain things. Might be the time of year, it might be out on your boat, it might be on that golf course smelling that fresh cut grass when you're out there maybe golfing with a prospect. All of these things, the more you can make it crisp, vivid, clear, bringing in most of the senses, then you can have an impact. Let's talk about things like self-image. There's a great book, another classic, Psycho-Cybernetics, that talks about the power of visualization and how we view ourselves. We know at Horse's Mouth one advisor named Sella Quinn that has a real inspirational story about, and she's actually featured, actually, I think, in Psycho-Cybernetics, where she actually, before she became an advisor, was working in the back of a diner and actually suffered from a cleft lip and palate as a youth and was very self-conscious, lacked confidence, and one day had the courage to write a handwritten note that she managed to deliver to a dentist that she knew came into the diner regularly. And because of that one action, she set into motion a series of events that allowed her to get some help and to have, I believe, some reconstructive surgery done. And now she is not only a top advisor, she's a speaker. She leads client seminars, and that whole transformation of her self-image came about as something that she imagined that she wanted to be more and have more. So this can be important there. If you're an advisor and one of your goals this summer is to be able to fit into that bathing suit or look better on the beach, you might think about your body image, visualization to think about what is your ideal weight. Think about your diet, your nutrition. Think about your exercise regimen as you get into developing some healthier habits. You can also think about, going back to that client meeting, have you ever done mental rehearsal about how you want that presentation to go? Again, going back to running that movie where you're the director and the star. How are you presenting? How is the client reacting? That's important. Think about what the response is going to be in advance, and you'll be surprised that that will play out. Now, I also mentioned, Ed, in the beginning that this can work against you, too. So you have to be aware of negative visualization where, you know, we all have had those clients that the phone rings and your assistant goes, it's so-and-so on line one, and your gut starts to turn, and you get all these scary images about how that call is going to go. Be very careful of that. Be careful about, if you're making prospecting calls, what's your attitude? If you're going in with a negative expectancy, then don't be surprised if that's what you end up with. So the negative visualization can lead to sabotage as well. Now, I'd also mention, in addition to how advisors can use visualization, let's get into some of the tips. One key is silence is better than a bunch of noise. Now, some people find that relaxing music playing in the background, or maybe this is on your way to work on your commute where you're kind of thinking about in advance how your day's going to go. But it's better to remove those distractions, get it on the quieter side. The other is relaxing the body. We find that creative imagination, such as visualization, works much better when we are relaxed physically. So this is where sometimes getting in a little exercise in the morning, or maybe when you're on that treadmill or you're taking that walk or working out at your gym, you might find it easier to visualize when you're doing some type of sort of repetitive activity. Think about deep breathing when you're using visualization. Close your eyes, again, to reduce distraction, and focus your thoughts on what you want, and again, not on what you don't want.
You mentioned Psycho-Cybernetics, and that book, my first impression was, this is some kind of New Age thing, but it's amazing. It's written by Maxwell Maltz. He was a medical doctor, and he said in there that every organism has within it a servo mechanism, like a sort of built-in guidance system or goal-striving device that it uses to help achieve its goal, which for most living things is just to survive. But he said that human beings can tap this mechanism that we have, whether it's creating an invention, writing a book, or building a successful practice as a financial advisor, or maybe buying something you didn't think that you could afford. So what does he mean exactly with that, your thoughts on that servo mechanism for advisors?
You're right on target there, Ed. I mean, let's think about the greatest artist, for example. Leonardo da Vinci had to imagine what that big painting was going to be on the Sistine Chapel. Think about inventors like Thomas Edison with the light bulb, or Ben Franklin with, you know, the stove, or some of the things that he did. Engineers and scientists at NASA that put a man on the moon. I think about pioneers of industry as we're going into summer. A number of you listening may be going to Disney World. We're actually taking our kids there this summer. And think about the vision that Walt Disney had and that servo mechanism that had to serve him, where he had to stay focused on something that for most people was unimaginable. You have to go back in time a number of years and think about an animated theme park. What about when he was buying up all that swamp land in Florida?
Right, right.
I mean, in order to stay focused on a vision, and there's a reason why, guess what? They're known as visionaries, and there are advisors who are also known as visionaries, and the way that they innovate and approach clients maybe in a little bit different way, the way they shape their messaging, perhaps their investment strategy, and all those things require that they stay focused on what they want. And it's important, going back to Psycho-Cybernetics, Ed, that you mentioned, it's said that planes, when they activate even their autopilot, are actually off course 99% of the time. So it's never a straight line when we're seeking the goal and when we're moving toward the vision. Often it's moving in the right direction, and it's constantly adjusting that course, constantly receiving feedback from our outer environment. And so a lot of times we find advisors that might get caught up in a fear of failure, for example, or other sabotage patterns because they don't want to initiate. They engage in behavior such as procrastination. And what we find is if they can find ways to just get moving and recognize that, look, most of the time you're going to be off course, and it's not a straight line, but if you start moving, then you get a chance to really engage that servo mechanism to get what you really want.
It's like a torpedo, right?
That's
constantly,
it.
it's constantly adjusting, and I mean, you could say, look, I'm never going to hit that ship, but you know, the torpedo goes in, and it's constantly adjusting toward the target.
That's right, and Ed, there's so much rejection in our business, especially newer advisors and experienced advisors. Think about what advisors listening have been through over the last 18 months with the constant drip from the negative media, the watching the portfolios dropping in value. And it's interesting to watch as well what's happened recently with some of the rally. Guess what? The mood has become a little rosier. There's been a little sunshine peeking through the clouds here. And we also have to be mindful of that as well, that it's our job as advisors to be leaders of clients and to be cognizant of how the outer environment is impacting client decisions. And the fact is that when things are bad or we get all this bad news, we have to stay focused on that ultimate destination because clients lose perspective. And usually it's the darkest before the light. And when's the best time to make new commitments and investments? It's usually when everybody's afraid and when things are down in value. And so that's kind of a dysfunctional component within our industry that I think visualization can help. You've heard the expression, keep your eye on the big picture. And the big picture, if a client has a 10-year time horizon is to not get too derailed by what's happening and recognize, yes, there's been a lot of pain, but there's also opportunity here for new monies coming in to buy assets that are significantly cheaper than what they were 18 months ago.
Yeah. And after I read Cybernetics, I started to encounter people who mentioned the book as being, you know, a powerful influence. And I saw an interview with the actor Will Smith, and he's built his whole career based on this stuff, on visualization. He imagined himself having success in music and just disciplined work toward that goal. Once he achieved that goal, which many people would just be happy to do that, he decided that he wanted to be on television. He wanted to have his own show. And he was completely motivated, visualized being on his own show, ended up having his own successful show. That would often be enough for many people. He then visualized making it in movies and being a blockbuster star, and just visualized it and disciplined himself. And to this day, I mean, he's one of the Hollywood's most bankable stars, and he's largely avoided all the scandals. I think pretty much avoided any scandals or anything that many of those actors encounter by having this daily focus on his goal and a real hardworking work ethic. But I was amazed, you know, when I heard that story. It's not just some guy getting lucky.
You're right, Ed. What a great inspiration and great illustration of exactly that. And think about how few people in Hollywood have been able to sort of run that gauntlet and all the temptations and all the pitfalls, but yet someone who is able to stay focused, obviously, on a vision seems to have avoided a lot of those mistakes and has been able to rise very quickly and has been very successful.
Yeah. So that's one of the things we're talking about today. We're talking to Bob David. He's an advisor coach. And we can ask a question of Bob, right? Just call 347-215-7291. 347-215-7291. Press 1 to raise your hand. Tell us how visualization has helped you, or ask a question or a comment. Bob, you've been in the business for many years. Now you're out on your own coaching financial advisors. And this, would you say when you're talking to financial advisors, is this really something that you start with? What is the person's vision? Where do they want to go?
It really is foundational, Ed. And frankly, I've had to hone my own visualization ability going out on my own. There's a lot of things that I've experienced that I know I've talked to advisors about for years, but when you really experience, for example, there may be advisors that have changed firms, or they've gone out on their own, or they've lost a big client, or they've had to rebuild their clientele because of market conditions, and developing that visualization is so foundational. And yes, if we start there, we start with the mission, the vision, and without that, and without that sense of clarity and purpose, everything else really is not able to be engaged and to be successful. It's really so foundational. It really is like trying to build a house without focusing on a good foundation. Everything that you build on top of that is subject to a storm or whatever. But when you get that foundation, you can weather any storm. And we're going to be on Friday, you know, talking a little bit about that as it relates to referrals as well.
Yep, and that's your presentation on Leading Your Own Referral Revival. That'll be at 1 o'clock on Friday on Advisor Fest, a webinar.
Yes.
Now, with visualization, do many of us have, do we visualize things that we think others want us to, and it's not really our true vision? Is that a problem?
That's a great insight, Ed. Actually, I have met many people over the years, as you start to ask them the simple question, what do you really want? It's interesting that some of the initial responses you get from people that may be struggling with their life purpose, struggling with how to approach their career, struggling with how to make change in their life work, they often have a cathartic moment where they say, oh my gosh, I think what I really want is. And it's such a breakthrough that when you're able to grasp that, suddenly it's like looking at a fuzzy picture or looking through a camera that isn't quite in focus, and all of a sudden you turn that lens, and all of a sudden it becomes crisp. And boy, when you lock on to that, and it's not an image somebody else put in your mind, but it's an image that you have deep down of yourself and what you want to really do, it's very powerful.
Can you get other people on board with your vision, or should you kind of keep it private?
I think it depends. I think that it's important in the early stages, even of goal setting, I think it's important to keep some things to yourself, because what we find, Ed, in our coaching work is it's so easy to sabotage our own initial ideas in something. It's like dropping a seed in the soil and not giving it enough time to really take root. You know, a little rain comes along and it just sweeps it away. And so I think there's a fragility in the early stages where it's best to keep some of those things private, maybe include family members, but don't get a lot of judgment coming your way, because that's how a lot of dreams are shattered before they even start. And then there's a point, if you're in business, obviously, where, or you're an advisor and you're expanding your practice, you want to share that vision, because now you're shifting into the role of a leader and you're wanting to bring people along to what your business vision is and what your business purpose is. And there's a pull that occurs where you're bringing people along, and it's far easier for people to relate to a vision than any other way really of communicating. There's an old saying, a picture is worth a thousand words. You could say the same thing for a vision.
And what you talked about, you mentioned the sabotage. Is that one risk? You say, you know what, I want to work with yacht owners. I like boats. I like big boats. I like being around people like that. And people could hear that and say, you know what, in this economy, nobody has yachts anymore. They're all selling them. You can't meet those people anyway. Right? And you start to think, man, maybe that isn't a good idea. How do you know, avoid that, but, you know, take the good points that might be made, but kind of protect that vision.
Great point, Ed. It's so easy to get derailed. Think about this fact. There were more fortunes created in the Great Depression than what people really realize. We're talking about the Kennedys, the Carnegies. I mean, there's different folks that really came on. There are many innovations that happened during tough times. There are many people that start their business not out of choice, but because they had to. But look what happens as a result. And oftentimes, tough times, sort of the crucible that shapes an innovation, and it forces us to stretch into new areas. And so it is very easy in our society to talk ourselves out of things, like you mentioned the yacht. And if we listen to the popular media, you would think that nobody has any money anymore. Well, if you think that's the case, just go out sometime and walk around your local mall or take a look at the airport. I got to tell you, I was just in the airport, and you couldn't convince me there weren't a lot of people still traveling. And try to think of it like a scale. And there's all of this evidence stacked on one side, maybe telling you you can't. And what you have to do mentally is start stacking that other side of the scale and overwhelm that negative vision with the positive. And make sure that that positive image trumps whatever negativity that you have there. Now, at the same time, you want to, you know, have a sense of realistic assessment in what you're doing. It may not be the best time, for example, to go after people who are selling real estate for big gains, because maybe that's a drop. On the other hand, maybe it's a great time to focus on folks that haven't been as impacted, maybe in the healthcare profession, or maybe auctioneers that have been selling assets off from people that had to sell. Maybe it's attorneys that specialize in foreclosures. I mean, for every cloud, there's a silver lining, and I think it may have even been Napoleon Hill that for every disaster or every negative, there is the equal positive in there somewhere if you just take the time to look for it.
Hmm. Yeah, I know, just walking around here downtown New York, and for those folks listening in, here, you just walk outside and you just see there'll be new restaurants opening up. And there was a guy interviewed who was opening up a restaurant, and someone said to him, what are you doing that for? You know, don't you know what the economy's like? And he said, people have to eat. That's what he believes. And you walk around and we go past the World Financial Center on my way into work here. There are a whole bunch of yachts docked in there. And I they're living. They apparently have some money, and you look at the visualization that goes into everything that you pass when you walk through your town or your city. Every single building, every business, there was a vision behind it that somebody had.
That's right. You mentioned a great exercise, Ed, and that is one of the things I encourage advisors to do is get out of the office. Get out of the office. Go visit some clients. Go walk around. Introduce yourself. Knock on some doors. And you may be surprised. Guess what? Business is still happening. To your point, there's still commerce going on. I was in a cab the other day, and I just was curious. I do this often in my traveling. And I asked, how's business? And he goes, you know what? He goes, I haven't seen any down. He goes, I see people buying new houses. He goes, I see new cars on the street. And so we can't let the negative media convince us that everything is just completely off and ground to a halt. That's just not the case.
That's a good point. That's good. What other tips would you have for financial advisors listening in about visualization in their day?
I think the most important thing is to quote Stephen Covey in his famous book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, is to begin with the end in mind. Whatever you're doing, the beginning of your day, think about how you want your day to go. Before you meet with that client, think about how you want that meeting to go. When you think about asking for referrals, what clients are you after? When you think about niche marketing, who can you best serve? Begin any activity with the end in mind, and that means visualizing in detail. Remember what I mentioned about running that movie. You're the director, you're the star, and inject as many senses into that vision as possible. Movement, sound, colors, even smells, and make it as real as you can. Remember that the human mind can't distinguish a real experience from a vividly imagined experience. Use that to your advantage.
Good. All right. Well, anyone wants some more Bob David, they can get you on Friday, 1 o'clock. You're doing a presentation, Leading Your Own Referral Revival, and you could register for free on the Advisor Fest page. That's going to be good. We're going to be talking about referrals, and maybe you could just give us a few little tips or a little peek into your presentation on Friday, Bob.
Sure, I'd love to, Ed. Folks, I'm very excited about what we're going to be talking about. I want to encourage everyone to attend this session. I really believe this is the prospecting opportunity of a lifetime, but many advisors have lost faith in their ability to grow their business with referrals because of things beyond their control. There are many advisors that fear asking because of poor portfolio performance. Others have doubt about whether they're what I call referral worthy, and now they're projecting uncertainty in the referral conversations. This session is designed to help you dramatically change your referral mindset so that you can start getting better referral results. There seems to be, Ed, in the coaching work I'm doing and the conversations I talk with advisors all over the country every day, there's two camps of advisors. One group is shell-shocked, and they're battle-weary, and they're just now with the market kind of rebounding, coming out from under their desks, but they're dealing with a lot of inner demons, if you will. There's anger, there's some guilt, and in some cases, even what I call toxic shame that's preventing them from really doing what they need to do for clients and what they need to do to grow their business. The other group have remained really surprisingly resilient, and they're opportunistic. They're showing courage, they're showing leadership, and they seem to be taking things more in stride and getting more assets, actually, from the competition. And so our goal for this session is to help advisors listening fall into that latter camp. We want to help you. I'll just give you just a quick outline. We want to take on that 800-pound gorilla in the room, Ed, which is really how do you get referrals given everything that's happened in this environment. We'll focus on developing that right referral mindset. We'll spend time identifying all the reasons why you might not be asking for referrals, and we'll show you how to develop what I call unshakable referral self-confidence. We'll talk about how to avoid referral requests that can turn clients off, how to find your unique referral voice, and what I call referral ears, listening is as important as talking in the referral game. And we'll talk about the value of what I call front row fans. We'll get into how to ask the right people, how to ask the right way and at the right time. We'll talk about how to get your clients to spread the word about you and what you do. Then we'll get into the importance of implementing a referral strategy that you can believe in. You know, Ed, the fact is that referrals are the best and fastest way to grow your practice, and it's also the best way to give you peace of mind because, frankly, if you're able to grow your business with referrals, you're not as afraid of losing clients. So we tend to underestimate that peace of mind factor with referrals. But I want to encourage everyone, again, to tune in Friday, June 5th at 1 o'clock. We welcome you into the tent and get ready to have a high-impact, high-energy referral revival.
Good. That's this Friday, June 12th.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not June 5th. I'm a week behind. Yeah, June 12th. Sorry, yeah.
You won't be going back through time to deliver that.
Yeah, this won't be a time travel here. I got to visualize. Yeah, visualization is about the future, folks. It's not reliving the past.
That's it. Good. And if you've just tuned in, we're going to have a replay of today's show so you can hear it. You can hear all of our presenters. And I want to thank Bob David, 20-year industry veteran, advisor, coach, and referral expert, for joining us. And if people want to reach Bob, they can send him an email, right? bob@bobdavidlive.com. Or if you join us on Friday, call in and we can get a question. Put you on the air live with Bob. We can talk about referrals. So thanks for joining us, Bob. We appreciate it. And we'd like to thank all of our presenters today, Jim Rohrbach, Connie Kadansky, and Bob David. And catch the replay. This is Advisor Radio, and today's show is brought to you by Vanguard. Vanguard's low-cost ETFs can form a strong foundation to help you meet your clients' goals. Tomorrow on Advisor Fest, we'll be speaking with Andrea Nierenberg as she talks about networking. We've got some good tips lined up. And Friday, we'll be speaking with Bob Chernow on futurism and being an advisor. So join us tomorrow on Advisor Radio. And coming up next on Advisor Fest, at 1 o'clock, Dan Richards is presenting a webinar on how a simple lunch strategy can supercharge your prospecting. Be great. If you've got your sandwich, you want to check that out, you can register on the Advisor Fest page. Then at 4 o'clock, Leo Pusateri presents Pricing and Defending Your Value in Good Markets and Bad. So head on over to Advisor Fest, check that link, and sign up. So that's all we have for today, folks. I want to thank everyone for listening. You're on Advisor Radio. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 in the morning. Thank you. Enjoy your day and visualize something.
Horse's Mouth presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalty.